This is Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Hello and welcome to this week's version of Beyond the Birds and the Bees. I'm Dr. Lisa Hansard from Texas Fertility Center, and I have an extra special guest today, Dr. Rinku Mehta, who we will be getting to know a little bit more about and picking her brain about some of the favorite fertility issues that she deals with and what makes her tick. Just to give you new listeners a little bit of background, Texas Fertility Center began in 1980, so we are entering our 30th year. And the founding father is Dr. Thomas Vaughn, who was the first reproductive endocrinologist in private practice in Texas. He practiced alone for 14 years before Dr. Kaylin Silverberg joined in 1994. I came along in 1996 to join the crowd, and it was the three of us for a long time. Our next to newest member, Dr. Natalie Berger, you probably heard before on the air, joined at the end of 2007, and we have now added our fifth physician, Dr. Rinku Mehta, Monday, right? 3 days here.
That's right. Happy to be here, Lisa. Texas Fertility Center has a great reputation, and I've known many of you guys for a long time, and I'm very excited to be part of this team, and I know that all the patients that come here get exceptional care that I doubt that they would be able to get anywhere else in this area.
And you know, we've only been paying her for 3 days to say that, so she's learning really, really quickly. Yeah, Dr. Mehta, we have known her for a number of years and have been in communication with her throughout this time, looking for the perfect timing and perfect opportunity to try to woo her to come to Austin. So give us a little bit of background on you in terms of your educational background, where you grew up, your training, how you landed as a reproductive endocrinologist at TFC.
Well, I grew up in Bombay in India. Actually, it's been renamed to Mumbai now. And I came to Dallas when I was 18 years old and went to undergrad at University of North Texas in Denton.
Once I Snoop. Yeah, come on, dude. Yeah, All right, dude.
Yeah. All right.
Mean green, yeah. Go fight, win.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, so
Fry Street.
After finishing there, I went to University of Texas in Galveston for my medical school, which was a great experience. Believe it or not, I was part of a fraternity. I lived in the medical fraternity house for 3 years.
Okay, I have to stop you here. So I am thinking about this little Indian chick, right? Right off the boat from Bombay. And, you know, so she goes to college and there's like lots of boys. And, you know, we all have kind of this, not we all. I'll just speak for myself. I have this preconception about the little Indian girl and her family's really, really protective. And so off you go. And you've come over here. And I know that, you know, India in general may be more of a third world country and probably was back then. But Bombay's a metropolitan city, so it's not like you came out of the bushes. But still, it had to have been quite a transition. And you show up and you go to college for 4 years and you're going to be a doctor. Like, how did that happen? Is that something you always wanted or your parents really encouraged? How did that work out?
Yeah, that is interesting. I always was interested in the biological sciences. But to give you a little bit more background, I come from the Bollywood world. My father was an executive producer and vice president of a big Bollywood movie company.
No way.
And of course, I wanted to be an actress or go into advertising or do something fun of the sort. But he thought it wasn't noble enough.
Noble, okay.
So I had to
noble do, enough for him, but not noble enough for his daughter.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I had to do something more productive with my life. So, you know, initially I thought, oh, I'll probably be a pharmacist or a physical therapist or something of the sort. But as I was in college, you know, taking some of the biology classes and, you know, anatomy and biochemistry really got me interested. And I was like, you know, why not? I think I can be a doctor. So I applied, except for I didn't do the bright thing. I was very geographically limiting myself because coming from India, of course, I was a little nervous. Right. When I went to UNT, I stayed with family in Dallas, and I didn't want to venture out too far. Okay. And I said, well, I'm not moving to Lubbock. So I said, I'm not going to Texas Tech. And sorry, Aggies, but I said, ooh, I'm not going to A&M either.
This is an Aggie station, by the way.
Only that, but I'm sorry, you're... person sitting across from you has a little bit of maroon blood going.
Nothing against A&M. I just didn't want to be in College Station.
In other words, you're telling us you were just uninformed at the time.
That is correct.
You may continue.
That is correct. So I only applied to a few schools, and I don't know what got into UTMB. They accepted me. But those were the best 4 years. I loved going to medical school at UTMB. It was a lot of fun. I got some great training. The OBGYN program, while I was miserable when I was there, because it was a tough place to be.
Yeah, it is a tough place.
But I appreciate it now. You walk through fire, but you come out strong. And then I was fortunate enough to match for my fellowship in San Diego.
So let me stop you there. At what point in the whole process did you decide that pursuing reproductive medicine was going to be your career goal?
Well, going through residency, you know, of course, all the subspecialties are represented in the various rotations that you do. I love delivering babies and all that stuff. However, I found endocrinology and reproductive endocrinology to be very cerebral, very cutting edge. Things are constantly changing. Can't say that much for maternal fetal medicine. It's a great field, but I think it's less dynamic than reproductive endocrinology. And the whole aspect of just going through the journey of your patients and the thrill you feel when they're pregnant and you're right there with them, you had some part in that process, is exhilarating. And,
yes,
and that's why
is.
All of us do what we do is because of those moments.
That's exactly right. So I'm sorry, I digress. Now you've decided to branch out and you are going to leave Texas and head to California. So what was that experience like?
By that time I was married. We had a 1-year-old son. And it was a difficult choice. My choices were to either go to San Diego or stay at UTMB. UTMB was planning to start an own program, and they wanted me to be their first fellow.
You would have been with us.
I could have. But at that point, I decided I needed a new experience. I needed to step away from what I knew so well, which is UTMB. I spent 8 years there.
Right.
And try something new. And my husband had a flourishing business in Houston. He did weddings for the Indian community. And he was very supportive and said, I need to follow my dream, and he'll support me in whichever way he can.
So did you have like these Bollywood weddings based on your dad's experience? I mean, that could have been so fun.
No, we didn't invite any Bollywood celebrities, or we didn't have a list that people could invite. But Indian weddings are very elaborate.
Yeah.
They definitely are. They can span 3 days. And my husband, Danny, he would do these elaborate decorations with, you know, these... they're called mandaps, where the wedding ceremony actually happens, and they look like little mini palaces with domes, and you know, just gorgeous.
Awesome.
But of course, we never saw each other on the weekends because he was busy on the weekend, and I'm busy all week.
Right.
So moving to San Diego, about a year after we were in San Diego, he sold his business and then focused on our family. But San Diego was paradise. Fellowship was great, and San Diego has perfect weather pretty much every day, so it was great.
So you spent 3 years there, finished your fellowship, and then stayed in California, right?
That's right. I wanted to come back to Texas at the point, but there weren't any opportunities there that I wanted that year. So I stayed in California. I joined a great practice called Reproductive Science Center. I learned a lot. I think I have to give them credit for making me go from a student to a private practitioner. And learned some great things there, but California was too expensive for us.
Especially the Bay Area, right?
Exactly. Coming from Texas. And all our family is either between Houston, Austin, and Dallas. So we wanted to be back. So I came back to Dallas, and I was there for a couple of years. And that was also a great practice. However, for many reasons, that wasn't the place I wanted to be for the rest of my career. So here come you guys.
Yes, we had our eye on you for a while, and we're really looking for a timing opportunity for us to be ready to expand and to be able to bring you on board, because you were really, even though you were in a group in Dallas, you were operating pretty much independently in a solo satellite practice that was remote from the other physicians, right?
That is correct. The main office was in Bedford, and I was in Frisco, which is about 35 miles from Bedford. So I think especially when Texas Fertility Center opened Round Rock, I think, you know, that was a great opportunity for us to sit down and discuss me coming on board, because that's certainly experience that I have in building an office that's remote from the main office. Round Rock is not as far from the main office,
right.
But, you know, everybody else is probably spread too thin.
Yes. Well, I want to talk about that in a lot more detail. We're going to break right now. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the strategies that Texas Fertility Center has looked at to really try to service the needs of all couples in Central Texas who are facing fertility problems and try to be really, really available and close to home where you feel like you don't have to venture out of your safety net. For more information about Texas Fertility Center in general and more biographical data on Dr. Mehta as well as the other physicians, please visit www.txfertility.com, and we'll be back in just a minute to continue this conversation. Thanks.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came down in the hollow, playing a new game, laughing and a running, hey hey, skipping and a jumping in the misty morning fog with all our hearts a thumping, and you, a brown eyed girl.
Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and the Bees with Dr. Lisa Hanser, that's myself, and our newest physician addition, Dr. Rinku Mehta. And if you're joining us on this happy 4th of July holiday weekend, I want to say, you know, happy birthday, America. And we're glad we're here. We're glad we have the opportunities that we have. And speaking of opportunities, we're going to talk a little bit now about our newest satellite office in Round Rock and Dr. Mehta's experience running a practice as really an independent physician remote from the mothership, so to speak, and what you liked, didn't like about that experience before, and what you're going to bring to the table to our Round Rock community as well as our Central Austin community.
Lisa, I think that the opening of a Round Rock office by Texas Fertility Center is going to be a huge boost for the Austin area community because it's growing so fast and there is a lot of growth in the north. And while the Austin Round Rock area is not as spread out as Dallas and Frisco was where I was practicing, the distance between the two offices was 35 miles. So for procedures going back and forth, I would lose, you know, an hour and a half of my day in just traveling.
Right. And it's not just the miles, it's the traffic that you have to deal with in Dallas and, you know, the time of day that you're going from one facility to the other, right?
Absolutely right. So in that way, this is much more convenient, both for me and for my patients. But the purpose of a Round Rock office is to at least make day-to-day visits a lot easier for the patients, you know, especially those coming for even north areas or Cedar Park, Georgetown, and surrounding areas, even Waco.
Right. That's what I was going to say. There's days when I'm out at our Round Rock office and my new patients are from, you know, Gerald, Waco, Georgetown, Belton. We see a lot of patients from Fort Hood, from Killeen, and having the Round Rock office saves those patients about a 40-minute round trip drive.
Absolutely.
Just not having to come down to the central office.
Absolutely. And that's a great boost for patients because people don't want to take too much time off from work. You know, for procedures, like if they're doing in vitro fertilization, they have to take the day of the egg retrieval and the day of the transfer off anyways.
Right. So making that extra 15 or 20 minute drive is not a huge big deal.
Exactly. But day to day, the Round Rock is so much more convenient. And, you know, while it is a satellite office, it is a comprehensive satellite office. So it's not that the care there is patchy. I will be there every day. And that is my goal, is to provide consistency to the patients as well as to the referring doctors. They know that I'll be there every day. They have a go-to person. And that office offers all services, including insemination, sonograms, whatever it is that a patient needs, short of in vitro fertilization.
Well, one of the things that I want to really make sure that our audience understands is that, you know, in your previous practice, you were the Frisco component of the center that you worked with. And so patients that were coming from Fort Worth or Bedford obviously were not going to be your patients because they're not going to drive to Frisco. But having you at the Round Rock office, I don't want people to misunderstand that you're the only person there. Every one of the physicians at Texas Fertility Center has a time frame that they spend out there. And there's going to be many days when there's more than one doctor seeing patients out there. It's really nice to have the consistency, but I also want the listening audience, particularly if we've got somebody who lives central or south and says, hey, you know, this Dr. Metis, she sounds pretty awesome, but I can't go see her because she's in Round Rock. Because you are going to have a presence in the central office as well.
That is correct. I will be there in the central office at least 2 days a week. And, you know, since this is only my third day, it will be a work in progress. If there's more of a need, we'll change the schedule. But so far, I will be in Round Rock every day and 2 half-days a week at the main office. But what I really like is that all the physicians and the staff, they all work as a team. Everybody, you know, takes turns, and other physicians do come to Round Rock. I do go to the main office. It's not like any one person is isolated somewhere. The nurses know to work with all the doctors. You know, it's great to have a team feeling, and the patients are always going to be taken care of regardless where they were seen and who their doctor is.
Well, one of the things that you know, happens with some of my patients, and this works out really, really well. I'm gonna go ahead and backtrack a little bit, because I'm not sure if our listening audience really understands what's typical for fertility practices or even, you know, regular OB-GYN offices. But we are really unique, I think, as one of the only fertility practices in the United States where we deliver incredibly individualized care. And what I mean by that is that you have the option of always, every single day of the week, seeing your own physician for ultrasounds, for inseminations. This is not a situation where you get pawned off on a nurse or an ultrasonographer and you only see your physician for surgical procedures. You have that interaction every single visit if that's important to you. At the same time, we have the convenience of having an ultrasonographer. Her name's Cindy, and she's fabulous, and I've known her for many, many years outside of our medical practice, who is there every morning starting at 7:30. So when we have patients who really need to avoid an appointment in the middle of the morning or the afternoon, they have that very early morning appointment as an option for them. When I was in Round Rock today, because I spend Thursdays, one of my half days there, and I had a patient who was coming from Kyle or Buda, that area, which is real south. And so for her, it was really not convenient to come all the way to the Round Rock office to be seen. So she came in and saw Cindy and had her ultrasound. And then as soon as I got back to the office this afternoon, I reviewed the findings and made my recommendations, and we saved her that trip. And so there's always Cindy, there's always whatever physician is at whichever office. If for some reason on that day you just can't make the trip all the way north or all the way south to the central office. So we really are trying to do everything we possibly can to make this much, much more convenient for our patients.
I think that's just simply wonderful for the patients. I've always done that. When I was in my Frisco satellite, I was only a doctor and I saw every one of my patients. You know, not all doctors can do that, especially in a group practice. What I really like about Texas Fertility Center is that the physicians are so committed to their patients and to providing that individualized care. I was surprised on how you guys managed to do that. And I realized, well, you limit the number of new patients that you see. That way you're available to take care of your patients. I've come from other practices where they'll see 6 new patients a day. And
that's all you can do.
And you can't do anything else.
Right.
And then you don't know the next day who that patient was. So I think just kind of slowing down yourselves, putting these limits on yourselves, it makes you so much more able to take care of your patients very well.
It really does. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that we are in a situation where we can bring on new physicians is that we also aren't going to have patients who want to be seen having to wait for weeks and weeks or months to meet with one of the doctors. So we want to be available, but at the same time, really, we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but one of the most important things and absolutely the most rewarding thing about being a fertility specialist to me is being able to develop these really personal relationships with couples. And, you know, I don't think that happens a lot of places. If you're doing nothing but doing new patients and seeing, you know, existing patients back for consultations, but you're not involved in the day-to-day care of that couple, then you really don't have the opportunity to develop that kind of close relationship with them. And, you know, now I see patients that I saw initially in, you know, 1998 or 2000, and we're now on their third or fourth pregnancy, and you really feel that just connection to their family because you knew these people when they were a couple without children, and now you've been through their whole parenting process with them. And I say I have a short attention span. I couldn't just spend all day doing one thing, but I don't want to. I want to talk to my patients and get to know them on a more personal level and understand where they're coming from and, you know, what their limits are and what they're open to from a fertility perspective and those kinds of options.
I completely agree. I think a lot of us go into this field for that aspect, and the patients are not numbers. They are all individuals. They're very vulnerable individuals.
That's true.
Taken such an emotional toll on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking to you to guide them. They're looking for you to be present for them. They're not here to see a sonographer or a nurse all the time. They want to see you. You're their doctor. And the journey we take together is so meaningful, both for the doctor and the patient. And, you know, we end up knowing their life story, you know, at the end of it. And we cry together when
it
doesn't work.
That's so true.
And, you know, some people, unfortunately, it doesn't work and they have to look for other options. But we're there to help guide them. And that's, you know, if you don't have a relationship with your patient, it's hard to have those conversations on when to stop and when to move on.
You know, I had this this experience when I was pretty new to this practice. I had been here about a year and a half or something, and we were doing a forum that was a little bit similar to this conversation that we're having, and someone asked me what my favorite aspect of the practice was and, you know, what I liked the most about it. And I said, oh, you know, the part that is so exhilarating is when you finally have a successful pregnancy after years and years of trying things that haven't worked. And I said, you know, that heartbeat and that experience, that's so great. And I remember that Dr. Vaughn was there and they asked him the same question and his answer was different. His answer was, my favorite part of this is developing these relationships with couples. And that just shows his maturity and his experience that what you said is it's not going to work for everybody. And there's going to be couples that say, you know, I know that these other options are available to me, but that's just not right for me and my husband, or I'm not comfortable taking that next step, and we would rather pursue adoption or being childless than make that next step. And, you know, obviously it's a personal decision for every couple, but if you get to that point with someone, then sometimes just helping them have closure.
Absolutely.
And move on instead of feeling like they got to this point and they were left dangling.
Absolutely. And the closure part, you know, many centers, as you know, will limit the age that a woman can do IVF based on a random age cutoff or a random laboratory level. And
why do you think that is?
For their statistics. You know, they want to look good.
So it's more about being better than the competition than it is taking care of the individual?
Exactly. And, you know, I think here, all of us at Texas Fertility feel it's very individual. We consult the patient about what their odds are. And after that, it is ultimately the patient's decision. Of course, we won't endanger anybody if it's a medically risky procedure, but there are no cutoffs, and some people have to do it for that closure. Then they can say, well, I tried it, it didn't work, and now I can move on.
That's exactly right. Well, I think we're coming up on a break. Take a moment for our sponsors to tell you everything fabulous about their product. Again, we thank you so much for joining us on this 4th of July weekend, and we will be right back.
When sky blue gets dark enough to see the colors, the city lights, a trail of ruby, red, and diamond white, it's like a sunrise.
Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and the Bees on Talk Radio 1370 on this beautiful 4th of July weekend. So I'm here with Dr. Rinku Mehta, our latest addition to Texas Fertility Center, and we've been talking a little bit about background information and just getting to know her, but, you know, I feel like you probably have questions for us after 3 days of being here, huh?
Yeah, I think it's nice to switch the interrogation from me to you for
now,
a little while.
Interrogation, I would have said, you know, pleasant interview.
Waterboarding.
Okay. So, Lisa, how did you get into this field, and what are you passionate about?
Oh, well, gee, okay. Oh, yeah, that's for a different time. Anyone who's listened to me talk about on this call-in show in the past would say, well, she's passionate about a lot of stuff, but she probably shouldn't be talking about it on the radio. Well, you know, I'm kind of like you a little bit. I thought that the reproductive biology portion of our OBGYN training was fascinating and challenging. So I didn't want to see myself doing the same things over and over every day by rote. But to be honest with you, the thing that really, really hooked me was the patients. And I talked about this a little bit, that when I was a second year resident doing my OB-GYN residency on my reproductive endocrinology tour, I came home after that first week, and I told my husband, I said, you know what? I just spent a week seeing women and couples that are just like us, that are, you know, young and healthy and focusing on their career and not thinking about pregnancy, and here they are having difficulties. So we just assume that we're always going to get what we want and that we can do it on our own timeline, and it's just not true. And so I said to him, we need to have a baby, like, right now. And he was like, right now, right now? I was like, well, you know, we can wait till our guests leave. But I really, really had that just sense of urgency and awakening that this may not be as easy as I think. And when I started really thinking about these women, and okay, let's be honest, when we were in OBGYN residency, you in Galveston and I in San Antonio, we saw a lot of unwanted pregnancies. We saw a lot of young women in, you know, terrible situations in labor and delivering and not having family support, not having financial resources for this to be a positive situation. And I remember thinking, I can spend my time and effort doing this, or I can focus on couples who all they want in the whole wide world is to start a family.
That's so true, what you just said. You know, many times we never think about our fertility, and it's such a finite thing. And it's very much related to the age of the woman and other factors. But, you know, 1 in 6 couples in the United States have issues with fertility. That's the last statistic I remember seeing. And you wouldn't think it's that common, but it is.
Well, until you start talking about it. And then you realize that there's so many couples who are dealing with infertility or have been through the process and have a family, and you would never know that they ever had trouble with conception. But you know, you're right about the 1 in 6, but you also know that when you're looking at couples that are older, that gets a lot more common. And it's not just getting pregnant, it's avoiding miscarriages and the heartbreak that goes along with that. So, you know, that just became kind of a calling and an awakening of saying, you know what, there are so many people out there that I think I could be helping in a different way than just trying to be a social worker and deal with bad personal situations and with women who have become pregnant not under ideal circumstances.
If you had one piece of advice to give our listeners about fertility, what would you tell them?
The same thing you would tell them. Don't wait. And there's never, ever going to be a perfect time. You know, I think you said, and you didn't go into any detail about this, but you said that by the time you moved to San Diego to start your fellowship, you were married and you had a child. So I know what that looks like. I know what it looks like to be focused on your career with the expectation that you're going to work 80 to 100 hours a week and you're not going to let anything get in the way of your residency and the training that you are participating in with your co-residents who, if you, you know, take off time to have a baby, somebody's got to pick up the slack. So, you know, I did the same thing. I sandwiched a pregnancy in as a third-year resident on my research elective with a very, very finite amount of time to be at home with her, because it was important to me to also focus on my personal life. So your first son was born when in your residency?
He was born towards the end of my third year, because the fourth year is an easy year, for at least at UTMB it was easy. So I did plan it that way. I got lucky. My second time around, it didn't go so well. I certainly had to self-help and have my colleagues help me out. But, you know, I did realize the importance of not waiting until it was too late. And I wasn't getting any younger. And while it wasn't convenient, since it was important to us, we decided to just bite the bullet, go for that second one. And thank goodness.
Right. Well, when couples come in and they say, well, you know, we were in school and career and, you know, this isn't a great time. You know, I always say, I want to tell them I'm the poster child for poor timing. You know, I had 1 in residency. I had 1 in fellowship. And then I got pregnant 2 weeks after I started my private practice here. So do you know how much my patients loved walking in, seeing a pregnant doctor? You know, they probably weren't super thrilled. If any of y'all are out there listening and you had to see me back in 1996 looking that way and you hated my guts, don't call in. You just keep it to yourself, because it wasn't personal, but it really was kind of awkward. So, you know, you asked me earlier about what my passion is, and I want to talk about that, because my passion has become helping those couples who have waited too late. And what I mean by waited too late is too late for fertility fertility to be an option using the woman's own eggs. And what we know is that by the time you're in your 40s, and obviously sometimes a lot younger, the odds of having a successful pregnancy diminish dramatically. And sometimes it's very clear that women are not going to be successful using their own eggs. And they're going to have to look at a scenario where they're counting on the help of an egg donor to conceive. And we started our egg donor program. We really kind of began it from scratch back in 2004. And I, being passionate about this, am the program director for our egg donor part of our practice. And, you know, we got to really custom tailor it the way we wanted it to be. And so we recruit young women from all over Central Texas. We're one of the only practices our size who has our own egg donor pool of young, healthy, motivated, precious, sweet women who are willing to go through these medical procedures and treatments to help couples who can't get pregnant otherwise.
And I think that's such a great service to provide, because having an in-house egg donor pool saves a lot of money for the patient financially, and it's so very convenient. And we're very strict on who can be a donor, and they are thoroughly tested for every single infectious disease or risk factor that you can think of. And having screened the donors ourselves, we know that these donors are eligible and they would be great donors. And again, for the patient convenience, it's unmatched.
So, you know, you mentioned, and I want you to elaborate a little bit on it being a less expensive way to go than if you don't have an in-house donor pool.
Well, there are many agencies throughout the country, even in this area, that will have their own pool of donors. Sometimes they're screened, sometimes they're not. But the agencies typically will charge quite a significant amount of extra fees for them to recruit the donor and screen them. So that's an additional cost that is passed on to the patient.
That's right. And it can be significant. It can be anywhere upwards of $5,000 extra on top of, you know, just the normal screening fees and donor compensation and IVF charges. And when you're talking about a process that is expensive anyway, then to add that kind of a financial burden is, it's difficult. One of the things that I love the most about having local donors is that we get to know them, but we also get to monitor them. And we're the ones making decisions about their dosages of medication and when their procedure is going to happen, instead of relying on an ultrasound report from a program or a sonographer that you don't know. You don't know how they're measuring follicles. And it just is so much better to be hands-on. And then the donor doesn't have to travel. So that's an added savings if you've got a donor that's local. And I want to talk just a tiny bit about this because, you know, sometimes we look at success rates and what you said about having couples come in who were not putting age limits on who can pursue treatment and so on. But you do have that situation where you're looking at a couple and you know based on their particular situation that, or maybe based on the maternal age, that the success rate's going to be in the 5% or less range. And then you have an option with egg donation where you can turn that number into 75 or 80% success just by using younger eggs.
That's right. And with egg donation, it's pretty much the highest pregnancy rates you can get with the in vitro fertilization procedure because the donors are so young. They're in their 20s. And you know, since I am new to the practice, but I've kept tabs on you guys for a while, the SART data, the reporting agency that we all report to from 2008, Texas Fertility Center, donor statistics look fabulous, you know, over 70% pregnancy rate, which is as good as anyone can hope for.
We have, you know, again, I'm not going to take credit for this, but I'll take a little bit. Okay, I'll take a moderate amount. You know, I am very, very proud of how successful our donor program's been. And we are consistently in the top 5% of all programs in the United States. And I think that, you know, if you question our donors and our recipient couples, it's such a positive experience, particularly when these couples have struggled with disappointment for so many years leading up to this. Well, we are going to need to wrap things up here. I can't believe we've already zipped through this hour. Wow. It's been such a pleasure having you here. And, you know, it won't be long before you are here with me or one of our other physician partners to be hosting this show yourself. You think you're ready?
I don't know about that, but this was definitely fun, and I'm so happy to be here with Texas Fertility Center and in Austin. Austin's a much funner city than Dallas.
Yeah.
Sorry, all the Dallas people, if you hear this, but this is a great place to be.
Well, I always joke, and I say, you know, native Texans spend all their time trying to get to Austin. And, you know, from coming from Lubbock, Texas, you know, go Raiders. I can't say that enough, you know, that Lubbock's fabulous and West Texas is fabulous, but there's just something very special and unique about Austin. So thanks for joining us this week. Next week, we'll go back to our more standard format where we'll be taking calls from listeners and answering questions that on anything fertility related. Last week, we spent some time talking about diagnostic testing, and we're going to continue with that a little bit and then start moving in a little bit more to the treatment options that we offer. We talked about donor here. That's a little bit more advanced than where most people have to start. But I want to thank you once again for listening and tuning in to Beyond the Birds and the Bees. Again, for more information, please feel free to visit www.txfertility.com or talk1370.com, where you can also access this information and listen to previous podcasts. Thank you very much for joining us on Beyond the Birds and the Bees, and we will be back with you next week.